This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, good morning. Welcome to The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland, on Zoomer Radio. How you doing this morning, Charlie?
I'm doing very well, and welcome to The Garden Party.
Yeah, The Garden Party is right.
Yeah, we're here. We're here in face-to-face.
Yeah, in Zoomerplex.
In the Zoomerplex
in Liberty Village.
And we can see trouble right through the glass.
Oh, yeah. Trouble. Yeah, our operator, Owen Wolf, is with us, ready to intercept your phone calls.
Being a good one.
Why don't I get, before, I know we're going to chat, why don't I give those phone numbers up right now? Don't delay. Give us a call, 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. And do let Owen know if you are a first-time caller, because if you are a first-time caller, then I, of course, am going to give you the garden wings. And we want you to call often. We want you to call early. And please, one question per call. And, you know, it could be an indoor gardening question, could be an outdoor gardening question, could be anything. It could be something about what's happening in your garden right now, or stuff going to sleep, or stuff trying to come back up in your pots inside. Whatever you like.
Or bulbs you forgot about.
Or bulbs, yeah.
Don't forget about those bulbs.
You get questions like that, like every year you get about questions that you go, I forgot about these bulbs.
Yeah, and it's
January.
What
do I do with them?
Yeah.
Take up juggling.
Go look for them now.
Yeah.
Get them in the ground before it freezes solid.
I have to tell you that I did do something this year that I've never, ever done in my life.
What's that?
I did this a few weeks ago, but I brought my geraniums in, which I've never, ever done that. And hearing about it on the show, you gave me a lovely, partly it was because you gave me
a lovely geranium
with a variegated leaf, which I love. And so I put that in a pot and I brought it in.
And how's it doing?
It's doing well, And then the other geranium that I brought in was one that I got from my wife for our anniversary, and it has got not a variegated leaf, but a variegated flower. So I brought that one in as well.
And those will be your mother plants.
Okay.
And you will take cuttings because they're going to start growing as the winter continues,
yeah.
or even starts and then continues. So by February, they're going to be shooting out all kinds of new growth.
Oh.
And it's that new growth that you are going to take. Those will be the cuttings you take, which will be the plants you take outside.
Oh.
Which is why when we bring them in, we always say, get rid of the flowers right away when you bring them in. You don't need to bring flowers in. But also trim them back. Even now, trim them back.
Okay.
Just make them a little more compact. Take the tips off. Mm-hmm. That way you'll get more sprouts or more growth and more to take cuttings.
Okay, so how far back should I trim them?
Like right now, you're just going to take tips off, probably, depending on the size of the plants.
Okay, great. Okay,
yeah.
So I've never done that before. I've always just purchased new geraniums the next year.
Yes, but gardeners are notoriously cheap.
fair enough. Yeah. I got my hand up.
Yeah, or broke one or the other.
Broke, yeah.
And so we share things a lot,
and
we grow from seed, and we propagate, and that way we don't, particularly something like the geranium I shared with you, it's a hard geranium to find. I mean, it's out there. It's called Vancouver, and I quite love it. So I brought in three, actually.
Okay.
So I'll be, starting up a nursery. Now, legally, you can propagate to give away, but you cannot propagate to sell.
Okay.
It's a trade. It's a patented plant.
Well, I didn't have three to bring in, but maybe next year you'll have five or ten. Yeah, because this year I just got my one beloved, but I thought, I'm going to try it.
Good for you.
New things.
Yep.
And you've had a good week?
Yeah. Busy, right? Things are happening. I'm really in denial about winter coming. I just can't. I don't know. Every day I'm like, there must be something I can do in the garden. So, put up some Christmas lights and that sort of thing. Rigged up the bird bath heater for the birds because otherwise they're skating on the bird bath.
Right, and I have to do that. I have to run the cable. I have it out there. I just have to run the cable.
Yeah, because it's pretty chilly. And they do rely on the bird bath at my place. It's funny when it's not – plugged in that you see them pecking on the ice and doing that sort of little little fancy pirouettes.
Yeah. Looking at you, pecking on the ice, looking at the window. Yeah.
Well, the Blue Jays, man, like 8 o'clock in the morning, they're squawk, squawk, where's my peanuts? Where's my peanuts? Yeah, yeah, they're all trained. They're very trained, my wild birds.
You know, I was talking about it on the air earlier this week, I think, about I'm not a winter fan. It's not my favorite time of year. Mm. I'm a summer guy. Love wearing my shorts. Love just throwing out. Love having the windows open and all those things. But my favorite time of year for my soul is the spring.
Right.
I agree. Love when the snow starts to recede and everything starts to pop up again. I love that feeling. And I know that I cannot have that feeling without it going to bed with the snow. So I have to. So that
get
makes for me.
Winter. Yeah.
It makes winter more palatable for me because I go, no, there's it's like putting in the time so I can enjoy the spring rebirth. I love it.
And it's also a break.
Winter is
a really good break for us to just, you know, reflect. And as the days get shorter, that's kind of what we do anyway. It's like, you know, we spend some time thinking about what worked, what didn't work, reflecting on what we will do differently, making notes, write it down if in doubt. So I take lots of pictures so I'll remember what did or didn't work and, you know, plans for even, you know, make sure you don't put the tomatoes in the same spot every year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's that kind of a thing. Or how do you remember where you planted all those bulbs? Well, you got to write it down so you know where they are and, you know, when to expect them to show up.
And I am still I'm still composting. And I know that it won't do anything, but I know that it'll start again. But I'm still putting it on there.
Yeah, of course.
And I'll go out there to the far end of the yard during the winter and put it on there.
Yeah, you will, eh?
I will, yeah.
Yeah, so most people I find in the winter, they kind of lose that get up and go to take out the eggshells to the end of the yard.
I should. I'm committed. Not that I should be committed, but I'm committed.
Well, it's good. It's great. Yeah. It's great to be committed. I mean, it's less going out into the, you know, into the white, into the waste.
That's how I look at it.
Cycle.
Yeah. And because I got less going into the green bin, going out to the curb, and because it's winter, I only put that green bin out when it becomes full. Like I put it out about once every month and a half because in the winter it freezes. It doesn't. There's no smell.
Exactly.
And so it's in my garage.
Yeah.
So I go. I don't need to put it
up and down the driveway with it every week.
Not for one little bag in there.
No.
Exactly. I just let it wait for a month and a half or so, and then I'll put it out when it's full.
Good example of lazy gardening, except in this case, lazy garbage.
Well, I figure it gets the trucks through. Yeah. Like if everybody did that and only put it out when you needed to, then it would just speed up the route for the drivers.
Well, they still have to stop and check.
They do, but they don't have to. If they only had to do one bin on every street rather than the two. Because in ours, they grab two separate ones. They're two separate grabs.
But then they might curse you because it's so heavy.
That's true, too. But it's all mechanical.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's all mechanical. The arms come in and they put
fancy.
It up. Yeah.
Oh, fancy.
It's all mechanical.
You're in a very rich municipality. Billionaires.
Oh, go you. Okay. Listen, those numbers again, 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. Let's just go to break. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yeah, we're back here on The Garden Show on this final episode of November. Monday is December 1st. So, and then the holidays are going to be approaching fast and furious. And when I say holidays, not just Christmas, but Hanukkah as well. Mm-hmm. And I know that you celebrate both in your household.
Yes, we do. Chrismica.
Okay. I love that. Not
at all.
Chrismica.
Elliot and I are doing a Jewish cooking class.
Ah.
On December 13th for a couple hours locally in Bloomfield.
I would love to.
Yeah, so one of the things on the menu are matzo ball soup.
Yeah.
I'm going to forget. Well, of course, see, Hanukkah is the celebration of light, and it's got a lot to do with oil. So there's a lot of deep-fried things attached to Hanukkah, like latkes. So
you know what? I'm good with that.
Yeah. Who can say no to a donut?
I'm good with
that.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's exactly what the foods of Hanukkah are. So that's what we'll be cooking.
Okay.
Special donuts that you put something in the middle, jelly in the middle.
Yeah. I think you should save me one of everything that you make on that 13th. That's what I think.
Okay. Mail it to you.
Okay. Oddly enough that we were speaking about compost because we actually have a caller on the line who wants to talk about compost. So we have Mary on the line from Toronto. Welcome to The Garden Show, Mary.
I would like to know what are the ingredients you use to make compost tea, and how do you do it?
Okay. Well,
compost
you don't
tea.
Compost tea, right?
Because right, I had, yeah. Sean James was on the show last week.
Right.
And a question came in, I think maybe from Mary,
okay.
for organic fertilizer for the houseplants.
Okay.
So he mentioned compost
tea. And you don't put oil and you don't put
no.
matzo balls, you don't
no,
put any of that stuff
of that.
In there that you don't put in.
Right. So first and foremost, Mary, you've got to have some compost, you know, available on your property with homemade compost. Many people do. Dean was, and I were just talking about, you know, the making of your own compost. So you've got your all your kitchen scraps going in outside into a box of some kind, a compost box. And I think you've got your radio on in the background, Mary. So either way, you've got the green scraps, you've got soil, you make compost. It looks amazing. We call it gardener's gold because it's dark and it smells great, like super humusy. That is what you put into a pail, like a, you know, it could be like a half a shovel or say 2 cups of the compost from the composter
yep.
into a bucket with room temperature water, let it sit, stir every now and then, about 48 hours. And Sean mentioned if you have an aerator, you put an aerator even into the pail to add oxygen, and that speeds up the releasing of some of those lovely nutrients that are in the compost. And either way, now you've got sort of, it's a kind of a weak looking tea. It's like a pale brown, depending on the quality of your compost. And that's what you water your plants with.
Okay.
So compost tea, and it's used outside or inside.
Compost
it's lovely.
Tea.
Yeah.
Well, and to that end, again, I know we've mentioned it on the air before, but especially during the winter, you know, we have a fish tank at home.
Yeah.
And when we do that water change where my wife is doing, it's like a certain percentage of the tank, and it goes, siphons it off, goes into a bucket. And now what I do is before, we have much more than we need for the household plants, but I don't put it down the drain anymore. I throw it onto the lawn because I figure it's going into the ground. And you could even do that in the winter. But I take out the scoops of it and I water all the house plants with it.
Yeah. And I mean, if you had room somewhere, you could sort of keep it standing by.
And then it's also good because it's a good temperature too.
That's right. Well, then I did that with my rain barrel. I saved a bunch of rainwater in pails. Not 20 pails or anything, but, you know, four. It'll keep me going for a little while.
Clever. Yeah, things I wouldn't have thought of before, but things that are good for your plants.
Water is precious.
Water is precious.
Good quality water is even more precious.
Okay, so compost tea.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Jean on the line from Newmarket. Welcome to the Garden Show, Jean.
Good morning to both of you.
Morning.
Charlie, I have told you, you are my inspiration. I am a COVID gardener. I couldn't even keep a spider alive. So COVID, and you inspired me.
Good.
I am calling today about my Hoya plant. I bought it a year and a half ago, and it was sad. That's all they had. It was about 3 leaves. And now it's a monster. I'm not calling to brag. I'm calling because I need help. It's about 30 leaves and going strong. And it's but it's in a 4-inch pot.
Oh.
Should I transplant it yet?
Okay, so you know how you know when to transplant is pick up that 4-inch pot, look in the bottom where there is a drainage hole, and see if roots are growing out the bottom. If there are... So if there are roots growing out the bottom, then that tells you that you could and should at some point transplant. November, December is not my favorite time for transplanting, but it's doable. So, I mean, you would just move to a 6-inch pot, nothing dramatic. If you're in a 4-inch, you do one step up, never go 4-inch to 20-inch or even, you know, 10-inch.
I've done that too,
And that sets plants back. Like they go into a shock. It's shocking to be transplanted at the best of times, but when you transplant into a too large of a pot, you double shock. So keep it simple, 4-inch to 6-inch pot. Of course, the new pot will have drainage holes as well, and fresh potting mix, which you'll moisten in advance. When you take the little Hoya out of it'll be just a mass of roots if it's really ready for transplanting. So with your fingers, loosen the roots. They tend to spiral and get all tangled up in the shape of the pot. So you want to loosen that up. You want them to grow out from that mass that they're currently in. They won't unless you tell them to. So it's a little tickling, combing sort of a process with your hands, with your fingers. Get those roots loosened up.
It's a bit of coercion, is
it? Coercion, persuasion.
Persuasion.
Yeah. But
The leaves look just fine. If it ain't broke, can I just leave it?
Yep.
Until more spring?
Exactly. February, late February, early March, you'll be jumping all over it. So.
Thank you, Charlie. I will be calling you back. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks, Jean. I know the only thing that troubles me about Jean is that she is going to just swell your head every time she calls and says that you
are is that a problem?
The cat's pajamas, as it were.
Cat's meow.
The cat's,
cat's meow.
Can we talk about, you got an email. I'll give out the numbers again. Pull up that email that you got, because it's very timely, I think, this time of year. The numbers to call, though, are 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. Don't be shy, and certainly don't leave your call to the last 15 minutes, because then we might not be able to get to it, okay? So call us now with your gardening question. But you got an email from Cheryl, and she sent a picture, and it is her question, very quick. Is this a leaf or a flower bud? More importantly, should I bring it up into the light? Okay, which reminds me of that movie Poltergeist. Oh, go into the light, go into the light. But
well, subject line is amaryllis.
Amaryllis, yeah. And I recognized it as soon as I saw it in the picture, and I knew what it was, but it's you answer.
Go ahead. What do you see?
Well, I, you know what? I think it's the leaf.
Yeah,
I don't
that
think
is
it's not the bud, but it's the leaf, but it is also indicating to me that that amaryllis is ready to go.
It's woken up.
Yes.
So, and you can see it's very white, the leaf that is emerging from the top of the bulb, which tells us it's in the dark where it should have been. Mm-hmm. So we see one leaf kind of sticking up, looks like maybe as much as a couple of inches, and then a second could be
I think it's a leaf.
Flower bud, the next one. But
yeah.
It's probably a leaf. Right. Flower buds come first.
And they're
much fatter. Thicker.
Yeah.
They're thicker. Same kind of
ovoid,
I think is a word, shape, but much thicker through the girth, not thin like a leaf blade. But once it starts to grow, you really might as well just let it grow.
Yeah.
So get it into the light, water once, right? We got to give it some water and let it do its thing. It will be, you never know, it might shoot up a flower bud at some point over the next couple of months, or it might just be a leafy plant for this entire season.
I know you have a number of them at your house. Have you had any that have started to pop up yet?
I haven't looked lately.
Okay.
But probably not. Yeah, I think I have 7 pots in my basement. Yeah, so I'll have
to
check.
We have 2.
Yeah.
We have 2. And I just, every once in a while, I go down, and because I have to go down there for something, and I just touch, and I know the bulbs are nice and hard, and that's an important thing.
Yeah, because they're bone dry, in the dark, in the cool.
Okay.
Yeah, so I just put mine down with green leaves attached. So they're never very pretty right now, because it's just going to be a bunch
of
dead leaves all over the place. So I do need to do that. That's a good point. Put that on my to-do list.
Okay, we'll check that. And we will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yeah, we are back here on The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio. And it is the 29th of November, the final weekend of November. And I saw an article that was quoting the Old Farmer's Almanac. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you feel about that publication.
It's amazing.
Is it? Okay, because they were saying that if you are hoping that December is going to come in gently, that it probably is not.
No,
they're suggesting that they're saying from the 1st until the 11th is going to be a lot of rain and snow flying around, and short spurts of it, but a lot of them, and not very pleasant for a lot of people.
Yeah, well, certainly the Weather Network, Environment Canada, is forecasting a December to remember.
Remember, okay.
Because they're just saying it's going to be colder than many Decembers we've had in the past, with or without precipitation, but it's going to be cold December and January. So I think that's partially why I'm in denial. I'm still haven't pulled out my winter coat. You know, I'm like, no, there's no winter, but it is coming, whether I like it or not.
Well, because I'm traveling around this weekend.
Yeah.
I did when I left yesterday, because I spent the night in Mount Hope at my in-laws' place. Then I came here, and I'm in Prince Edward County, Campbellford area. today for and tomorrow for show. I threw the boots in the back of my truck, even though we didn't really have a lot of snow. I thought, you know what, if I get stuck, I want to make sure that I have what I need. And in the vehicle.
Collingwood was forecast to get like 50 centimeters of snow yesterday.
And we didn't get almost anything.
Well, but you left maybe before the snow started.
No, like, I mean, I'm saying that like it was crazy that we were in this, when we looked at the radar, there was like a stream of nothing that we were kind of missed by it. Which was convenient for me because I had to travel yesterday. Mm-hmm. But we know the snow's coming.
Yeah, like it's
coming.
Whether we like it or not.
Yeah. And the ski hills are going to get their snow. And but we just didn't get a lot of it.
Just to give a little plug for the show you're doing in Campbellford is at the West Bend Theater.
Yeah.
And it's quite a lovely venue for
it
anybody who's ever been there. It was built specifically. Look, it was started as an old farm, but of course a new barn was built. And it's a beautiful, beautiful barn where you will be narrating The Fir Tree.
The Fir Tree.
Today,
tomorrow, and next Saturday. And it's based on a Hans Christian Andersen story, The Fir Tree. So Brian Finley and Donna Bennett, who co-created that venue back in 1999. I met Donna at the Sterling Festival in 97, and that's when I met the two of them. And they told me they were going to do this. And it's also worth mentioning that in 2017, both Brian and Donna became members of the Order of Canada because of their work that they did at that
festival. Yeah, it's lovely. Yeah.
And so it is lovely. And we had a rehearsal last week, which is why I was not with you last week. And I'm off right after the show to Campbellford, and we're on stage at 2, and then we got a 2 p.m. tomorrow, which you will be at.
Yeah, exactly. Myself and my family are attending tomorrow's matinee.
Yeah, and it really is a lovely venue. And prepare yourself. 90 singers in that barn.
Wow.
90
it's
of all ages.
Barn.
They got a children's choir, adult choir, combined choir, soloists.
Beautiful.
And I get to narrate and tell the story around
all of their
the singing.
Music.
So it's great.
Lovely.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it as well. We have a first-time caller on the line. Let's go. We've got Joe, who's calling from North York. Welcome to the Garden Show, Joe.
Thank you for both to taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome.
Good morning. Listen, you get your wings.
Your garden wings. There you go.
There you go.
There are your garden wings for being a first-time caller, Joe.
Thank you. Thank you both. my question this morning is, I have a cactus plant that is a beautiful green and healthy, but for the last 2 years, it won't bear any flowers.
Mm.
Last year, I only had one. This year, so far, I don't see no buds. I don't see any way that it's going to have flowers.
All right. Well, you know what? That Christmas, it's called a Christmas cactus, I assume is what you've got. It's nice and healthy, so you've obviously got a nice sunny spot in a sunny window. All of that is good. But in order to initiate the flowers, temperature matters. Now, it's a bit late, but usually what I'll do with Christmas cactus is have them outside all summer, and I'll leave them outside until we get some fairly good frost, right through, you know, 0 degrees, even minus one kind of, and that lots of buds will be on the plant at that point, and then it comes in the house, and then they all pop open. So if you have a spot, like in your house, do you have a room that is maybe not heated as warm as any other rooms in your place?
I do have I used to keep it in a window, and then it got too big. You know, this is a southern exposure window, and then it got too big, and now I have it on a kitchen table, which gets a lot of light.
Okay. Well, so it does love, like you said, that southern window is great. It's also cooler than the kitchen table. So again, you're more likely, right in a window, not preferably not touching the glass, but if you could maybe get like a little table or a plant stand and have it stand in front of that south window, and then just remember to turn it every Sunday or once a week so that it's not all growing on one side, you may find that some flower buds will start this year. But next year, see if you can get it outside for the summer. It doesn't have to be in full sun, but just in a bright spot outside in your back garden somewhere. And you'll have lots of flowers this time next year. All righty.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks for the call, Joe. And don't be a stranger. Make sure you give us a call back again. Okay. We got a little message from our operator, Owen, who said that Becky in Brampton says to make sure you dilute the compost tea with water.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't really know what is You don't know the cause. It's the thing with organic fertilizers. Yeah. You don't have a lab doing the analysis for mm-hmm. you. So always err on the side of under versus over fertilizing. Okay. It would really depend on the quality of the compost you're using, how long it sits in that pail of water. Right. And then I would probably base it mostly on color. If it's like a really dark brown, then for sure you want to dilute it so that it looks like tea, like a yeah. cup of tea.
Okay.
Not too strong of tea.
Not too strong. No.
You could burn. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course all the leftover from the tea, put that back in the compost.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Don't
yeah.
throw it out.
No.
Put it back in the compost.
No. Yeah. Exactly.
It's got stuff in it.
Of course.
Okay.
Full of all kinds of good stuff.
Good. Numbers to call: 416-360-0740, 1-866-740. 4740. We're going to Carol now in Orangeville. Welcome to the Garden Show, Carol.
Good morning.
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 We planted walnut trees from walnuts 30 years ago, and we have 5 huge mature trees, and this was a prolific year. Mm. My husband had to actually rake walnuts off the driveway to be able to drive safely. It was just so
wow.
many.
Wow.
Now, the squirrels have been busy.
They love you.
And the questions are, like, there's huge heaps of unopened and opened ones under the walnut trees, which we're trying to rake into the forest, but they're also dumping them under one particular maple tree. It's like a favorite place to eat. Is that going to poison our maple tree?
Those are the shells that they're leaving behind after
yeah.
Yeah, after getting out the meat, so to speak. Okay, so will it? Every part of a walnut does have a chemical in it called juglone, and that juglone does set up an environment that is unfriendly to other plants.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of the way walnuts have evolved over the millennia. You know, they're the ones, they want to be alpha. So those walnut shells will not initially cause any problems, but over a period of many years, as they slowly decompose, they will release that juglone. So what would I do? I wouldn't get rid of all of them, but I guess I'd be a little hesitant to have a huge pile in one spot, because that one spot will ultimately end up. Now, if it's an established maple, and remember as well that if it's a tree has its feeder roots way out on the tips of the roots. So the tips of the roots are well beyond the drip line. So the drip line is where, you know, the tips of the branches. So at the base, at the trunk, you don't have feeder roots there. So even if those walnut shells do decompose there, it'll have impact on, say, growing grass or other flowers beneath the maple, but it shouldn't actually have any real impact on the maple.
Oh, that's good, because we were worried. We have so much snow out there now, and you know, in the last 3 days, it's kind of late to take them off unless
yeah.
we get a big thaw.
Yeah. Oh, and I wouldn't be overly concerned about, you know, what happens right now. It would be much more over a period of years, because this is pretty heavy stuff. This is not going to decompose overnight.
Right.
Yeah, worst case, I guess you could always bet. Do you have yard waste pickup where you live?
No, we're out in the country.
Yeah, same with me. So you'll just maybe start a walnut pile somewhere where you don't want anything to grow. you could start a pile of walnut shells.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, as Dean said, the squirrels must really love you.
But congratulate, like, that's impressive that you started these 30 years ago from walnut seeds.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks very much for the call there, Carol.
Yeah.
And again, Carol was calling from Orangeville. And wherever you are, give us a call. Could be, as you can see from the show here, we've had amaryllis questions, we've had transplanting questions, Christmas cactus, we've had, you know, walnut questions, you know, like really anything, as long as it grows.
Bring it on.
Tree, garden, bulb, whatever, you know, we want to hear about it.
Christmas fir trees, any
of that. Christmas fir trees. There we are. Okay, we're going to Newmarket. We've got Jean on the line. Welcome to the Garden Show, Jean.
Welcome back.
Well, Charlie, thank you. I'm going to add to my wish list. I want you to have John phone you and you talk together.
Oh,
that
John,
is my
yeah.
highlight of this talk. You're both so intelligent and so informed. So that's what I want for Christmas. But I do want...
I'm just saying, John, if you're listening, you can hear what Jean is saying. You're going to have to call in. Say hello.
Yes, please, please. And my question is, I was given an orchid for Christmas last year, and I go, oh, boy, here we go. I got to call Charlie. Well, the darn thing bloomed, wait, blooms for months, and now it has just stopped, and it's in a 5-inch pot.
Mm-hmm.
Can it stay there, or do I?
Yep, leave it. Leave it. It's it's rare that you that we repot orchids. We do, but it's about every 2 to 3 years. And so that, don't rush into any repotting. When you do feel like it's time to repot, it's important that you've got the right pot and you've got the right substrate. Because, of course, orchids don't grow in soil, and they sure don't grow in, you know, green plastic growers' pots. So, Jean, you're going to put also on your Christmas list that you want to go to the Southern Ontario Orchid Society annual show, which is at the Toronto Botanical Gardens every year at Valentine's Day.
Thank you very much. Thank you. That's my story.
There you go. So, and anybody who has, you know, wants orchid, you want to buy stuff. You might want to buy an orchid, but also pots and substrate and expertise. It's all there. I don't have the dates right now, but I can certainly look them up. It's always in mid-February, and it's a wonderful
good old Terry Kennedy
weekend show. Yes, and Terry usually comes on to tell us a bit about it, and I'm sure we'll get her in January to bring us up to date.
Thanks for the call, Jean.
Thank you.
Okay, let's dive right into our next caller. We've got Elizabeth on the line from Scarborough. Welcome to the Garden Show, Elizabeth.
Hi.
Morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, thanks for calling.
I have got a snake plant. I've had it ever since it was like maybe an inch tall. What I've got right now is I've got about 25 of these little plants all crowded together in an 8-inch pot. I read somewhere that if you force them, like make them tight, that they will flower. I don't know if that's true. And will they flower? And what should I do with them?
All right, just so people know what we're talking about. Snake plant, properly known Sansevieria. That's the proper name. If you want to look it up, S-A-N-S-I-V-I-E-R-A, Sansevieria, I-A. Another common name is mother-in-law's tongue.
Oh, right.
I've heard of that.
Yes. So snake plant, there's lots of common names. But nevertheless, all right, so having it pot-bound, as you've read, it is good because they have very small root systems and they're very easy to kill with overwatering. So we like them pot bound because we're less likely to overwater when there's more roots and less soil, right? Yep. So that's good. If you wanted to, I wouldn't do it now. Again, this is kind of a February project on a day when you're looking for something to do. Lay out some newspaper, pull the plant out of the pot, and with a sharp knife, you would sever all those little plants apart. As long as you've got some leaf and some root attached, that is a fully fledged plant. So if you've got 10 or 20 little plants all mushed together in that pot, you could have 10 or 20 individual plants afterwards. You'd pot them all up separately into little 4-inch pots and put them in a sunny window. I have rarely seen them flower indoors in Ontario. The one time I did see them flower, they're very fragrant, full sun, like pure either west or southern window, in the window, no blinds, no curtains, in the window, and err on the side of underwatering rather than overwatering. And yes, just lo and behold, on a cold day in January, you're going to say, what am I smelling? And you're going to go, oh my gosh, my snake plant is flowering.
In January?
Yeah. They'll do it. They really respond. Like it's a winter thing. These tropical plants, from a whole different world, so they'll respond when it makes sense to them. So it is possible and doable, but err on the side of underwatering rather than over. And remember, we don't fertilize at this time of year any of our house plants unless they're actively growing. So orchids might be flowering, we can fertilize those. Christmas cactus flowering, fertilize those, but not your regular sitting there on the window ledge green plants. Not now. Wait till March.
That makes sense to you, Elizabeth?
Yes, it does. So I'll call you in January to let you know about the flowering.
Exactly. I need an update.
Looking forward to
you.
It.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for the call, Elizabeth. And just between you and me, Charlie, I think that, with all
just between
the greatest
you and me,
respect.
Nobody else is
nobody
listening.
Else. No. One mother-in-law's tongue is more than enough.
Who needs 20?
Actually, I saw my lovely mother-in-law last night
there
when
you
we
go.
Stayed in the house. And my father-in-law.
And they put up with you for the night.
They put up with me for the night.
Just like, I'm going to put up with you tonight at my
house. Yes. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I bet. Elliot's making a special dinner for you and me and him, and I'm picking up my children. So
also,
and Owen is so jealous. He wants to come. Next Saturday, we are going to broadcast from my home studio.
Yeah.
But of course, we could also broadcast from my home kitchen and maybe have some waffles while we're talking gardening. Maybe.
And that was my idea.
That was in waffles.
Yeah.
I am so in for waffles.
Oh, why not just go all the way?
Exactly.
Just do it right in the garden while you're at it.
Oh, thanks for that.
The garden waffle
out in the garage with my dirty carrots and sweet potatoes.
Shivering in the wind.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
And it'll go, no, the audio is really bad. I can only hear wind. You people, get out of the wind.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, the numbers to call, 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
We are back here on The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio. And what do we got on our brain now? We're talking about microgreens, is that
well,
right?
Well, it's partially because we have a caller who wanted to chat about kale. Marsha.
Okay. So why don't we go and see? Let's just get her on
jump
then.
To Marsha.
So we got Marsha from Toronto. Welcome to The Garden Show, Marsha.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Our pleasure.
Actually, kale is one of my favorite vegetables, believe it or not.
No, it's okay. Yeah, me too.
I understand that kale can grow in the winter outdoors. So if I get some kale seeds, plant them indoors, let them sprout for about 6 to 8 weeks, can I transplant them outside?
No. No, because it's going to be the dead of winter. They will be tender little sprouts that you raised in your heated home. You take them outside, they're just going to keel over and die in the frost. What is growing? Like, I still have kale outside, but that's kale I planted last early summer. And the interesting thing about kale is it gets sweeter as it gets colder. I mean, it certainly gets tougher. So, you know, you really have to do some serious massaging on the leaves or chop it up small if you're going to cook with it or put it in a smoothie where it's going to get really chopped up.
Yeah.
But the flavor does change as the temperature drops. What I do at this time of year, once I'm done with, you know, harvesting my outside kale, and if you don't get to it in the next, you know, sort of by Christmas, it's not, by January, it's not so great. It's pretty haggard out there by then. But certainly you can freeze it, you know, harvest, continue to harvest, you know, take out that main spine because you're not going to eat that. That's too tough. But you could certainly take the leaf blades. Pack them into freezer bags, freeze it, and again, for smoothies or stir fries, that sort of thing. But what you made me think of when you said you love kale, and I too love kale, and I start doing this at this time of year because I hate the prices at the grocery stores. I'm growing sprouts in a jar, alfalfa sprouts, radish sprouts, broccoli sprouts to add to salads and toast in the morning. But I'm also starting my microgreen collection. I've just planted some peas two days ago. So I use the takeout containers from the Chinese, any of the sushi takeout, just shallow plastic tray with a little lid, put some good quality soil in there, moist soil, pack it full of seeds, kale. This works totally perfectly with kale or peas or anything. I have mine right now on a heater pad just to speed them up by heating them up, but a southern window works as well. They will sprout, and once they start to grow, you get your scissors out and you just harvest. You know, you're making a salad.
And have you got those seeds in any medium whatsoever?
Yes, in a potting mix, yeah.
It is
moist in
a potting mix.
Potting mix. Put the lid on until they sprout, and then lid comes off. And remember, we have to turn them in the window to keep them growing straight.
So that container acts as a little greenhouse.
Exactly. Exactly. And what happened last year, I had kale growing in the spring and it got bigger and bigger. You know, we were cutting it, but it keeps growing. And I eventually just took that whole container of kale, you know, 500 kale plants in a very small container outside, and put it in a pot. And so early in the spring, but it wasn't frosting still, or it was very mild, you know, it was cool temperatures, but not super cold. I started harvesting kale because I took it outside and it started growing outside.
That makes sense to you, Marcia? You could just grow it inside, keep it in?
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you. That's a big help. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And I will mention for some good information, West Coast Seeds. That is a company out in Vancouver, obviously sells lots of seeds, but has wonderful educational materials on their website and a wonderful catalog that I just got in the mail the other day. So big, fat catalog, tons of good information on outdoor and indoor gardening.
And I was telling you at the commercial break that I had just the other day, I picked up some, and I was trying to remember what I got because there were a few different options. I think I got the broccoli sprouts and I got the arugula sprouts because I'm a big arugula fan. That's what I love, arugula.
And you paid $5 for a tablespoon.
Yeah, a little bit less, but you're saying that we can make this for pennies.
Exactly. Because when I grow microgreens, I buy microgreen seeds.
Right.
They're the same seeds. It's just a bulk package. So instead of just having like 10 seeds in the package, you've got like 500 in the package.
Okay.
So you can actually plant it in quantity and reap a harvest for an extended period of time. Yeah.
Inspired once again. Here
I'm
on the show.
You're at my house later today. I'll show you what
I'm
I do
forward
and
to that.
How I do it.
You know what I'm happy about is that we have another first-time caller on the line from East York. Welcome to the Garden Show, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Morning.
I'm
going to
give you right now. There's your garden wings.
Brilliant.
There you go.
There you go.
Okay, what do you got for Charlie there, my friend?
I have a seedling from Colorado blue spruce that I've sort of nurtured over the years, and now it's 4 feet tall, and I decided it's in an inappropriate place in the garden. I have to move it. I've heard talk about root pruning in the fall so that you can move it in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
Could you give me any insight onto that?
Right. So root pruning we use as a way to minimize the shock of transplanting. And with a four-year-old Colorado blue spruce and you're in East York. So has your soil quite sandy where you live?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it tends to be. It's like a beach, that a lot of those historic gardens. So would you even need to root prune? The reason we root prune is, you have to visualize this. Imagine a 3D event here. So you've got a plant, like a tree, small tree in the garden. You do an imaginary circle on the ground around the base of the plant, where you ultimately think, this is the size root ball I'm going to be able to dig and lift. You know, I don't have a crane, it's just me. And so you want as big a root ball as you possibly can carry and move. So root pruning is where we, from that imaginary circle, we say, well, that's going to be what I dig next year. So this year now in the fall, I'm going to use a sharp shovel and I'm going to bury my shovel into the ground, straight down, and cut some roots just inside that circle. I'm not going to complete the circle. I'm going to do every second spot is where I'm going to sink my shovel in sharply with my boots. I'm going to jump on the shovel, sever roots, and then walk away. So in the spring, when you go out to do that actual dig, you will have started the rejuvenation of new root growth where you severed the roots in the fall. So it does make the transplant a little, you know, so percentage-wise, you have a higher chance of success. But it's quite likely that you'll be able to move this little puppy anyway, 4 feet though, and you're keeping it on the property, right? You're not going far with it, or...?
No, I don't really have a place to keep it, so I was going to give it away, actually.
Do you have somebody who will take it?
Well, I have a friend in Vineland, perhaps, that would want it for her property.
Yeah, somebody with a big property. Good for you, because you know what? Blue spruce is so cute when they're little, you know, little puppies, but they grow into Great Danes. So 40 feet tall, 20 feet wide, right?
Yep. Got one.
Do they grow true?
You've got one too. Pardon?
Do they grow true from seed? Like,
no.
Is it a blue spruce or is it a green spruce?
Well, okay, so there's a lot. Every Colorado blue spruce, Picea pungens, they come in every shade of blue and green known to mankind. That's why we say when you're shopping at a garden center and you're picking a blue spruce, pick it based obviously on shape and health, but also color, because it's not going to get more blue as it grows up. The color it is when you see it, that's going to be its color. Now, the new growth is always brighter and you know, sharper than later in the season. But that color is its color. There's no more. And if it grew from a seed, you know, it could be any shade between a blue and a green. But yeah, good idea. If you can find a home for it, it'll be, the hard part will be transporting it because it's a good size and you'd have to, you know, soil attached to the roots, old sheet holding it all together, or, you know, burlap. You're going to basically do a ball and burlap when you dig it. All right. Good luck with that, Larry.
Thanks for the call there, Larry. We do have to run to our next break, but we'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
We are back here on The Garden Show, and we're going to jump right into our next caller. We have Alan from Thornhill. Welcome to The Garden Show, Alan.
Good morning to everyone from Zoomer Radio.
Good morning.
We have a little feud going on here.
Oh.
About cactuses.
Uh-huh.
How often do I water them?
Mm. Okay, so are they thorny cactuses?
They're not Christmas cactuses. They're,
no.
I don't know what they are.
But they're the kind that...
Regular.
Yeah.
They have prickles on them?
They have sharp spines?
Yeah, some of them is long.
I'm just trying to clarify. So there's succulents, like a jade plant would be a succulent, but it doesn't have any prickles on it.
Yes, it does.
Okay, so these are prickly. Are they in clay pots or plastic pots?
They're in clay.
Okay. Are they in sunshine or not? Full sun?
Yeah. I put them beside the windows, yeah.
Yeah. Like south and west windows are the brightest. Clay pots are the best. Depending on the size of the plant and the size of the pot, the amount of soil, most cacti have very small root systems, and it's very easy to overwater them. As a matter of fact, you'll rarely kill a cactus by not watering it, and you'll very often kill a cactus by watering it. So if in doubt, don't water. That's really all I can say.
Yeah, but how often should I put a little water in there?
Well, it could be once every 6 months. It could be once every 6 weeks. It could be once a year. Like, it just kind of depends on the size of the pot, size of the plant.
How dry one's house is?
Yeah, the humidity in your house, the temperature in your house,
yep.
The amount of light it's in. But the more soil in the pot, the less often you're going to water, because that soil is going to stay moist. But if it's a little tiny 2-inch pot, then you're going to water a little more often. The rule of thumb is, when you think it's time to water, wait a week.
We have some in little pots and some in big pots. So it's hard to determine.
I know. Well, and again, there's a lot going on there temperature-wise and sun-wise and all that important stuff. But like I said, you're not going to kill them with lack of water. You're going to kill them with too much. So the little guys are going to need water more often than the bigger pots.
Few variables involved there. Yes, indeed.
Thanks, Alan.
Okay, we have one more caller on the line where we were going to get to. We have Monica. She's calling from Newmarket. Welcome to The Garden Show, Monica.
Good morning, Charlie and Dean.
Morning.
Good morning. I'm calling in response to your previous caller who had this bounty of walnut shells.
Mm-hmm.
Walnuts and walnut shells. Well, I find in my experience, gardeners are often very creative,
mm-hmm.
but also lovers of wildlife.
Yes.
So I remember as a child, my mom with us, we would paint walnuts and then hang them from the Christmas tree.
Right, yeah.
Silver and gold, right?
Sweet.
But what I've learned about recently is an animal refuge. It's called Shades of Hope Wildlife Refuge mm-hmm. in Pefferlaw.
Okay.
And I'm sure across the province and everywhere that people are listening to you, there are wildlife refuges. But on their donation list,
mm-hmm.
they are asking for local chestnuts, acorns,
walnuts.
Maple keys, and walnuts.
And that'd be for food.
Yeah.
For
some, like squirrels, like, you know, squirrels that have been brought in, mm-hmm. injured, or are being rehabilitated. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
so, what a wonderful way for us to support our local
mm-hmm.
wildlife.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, it was Carol who called us from Orangeville who had this plethora of walnuts, but apparently it's all under the snow right now. But great suggestion.
Great
you know, it's
tip.
Like donating to the food bank, right? Except in this case, it's the wildlife food bank. So
great
idea.
Right?
Thanks, Monica.
Thanks very much for the call.
Our bounty we can share with our local critters.
Indeed.
Exactly. And we love most of our
that's
critters.
That's a great last call for our garden show today.
That
that's great. Thanks very much for the call, Monica.
Yeah.
Okay, my goodness, and we are quickly running out of runway. We got about 90 seconds
it's
left.
True,
it's crazy.
It's true. Well, you know, these things happen. But the what a great show. I mean, we were all over the province, and like you said, what a nice call to end on. So Wildlife Refuge, she mentioned, is called Shades of Hope in Pefferlaw. So what we can do to support some of our critters, and like you mentioned, you've got some cleaning and filling to do it with your bird feeders at your house when you get back home.
I do. I have a little, I have to spend a little bit of time. I have been Time has been at a premium lately, so I have to do some outdoor work. Going to give some me time to me this week and get out
job.
And do a little bit of
and
work
hopefully
for that.
You don't have to put on your cross-country skis to get out to the bird feeders.
I'm hoping not.
Yeah, hopefully not. Well, Orangeville's got snow, but I think it's pretty dry at my place still, so we'll enjoy some of the birds at my place over the next 24 hours, and I'm looking forward to the concert, the choirs, the multitudes of singers
and
at
speaking
West
of nature,
Bend.
Looking forward to being at West Bend because it's a barn right in the middle of this, this
huge
meadow
like a sanctuary,
area. It is lovely. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very pretty part of the world. So that's north of me up Northumberland County as opposed to Prince Edward County. Thank you. Thank you very much, Dean.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. Owen couldn't do any of this without you. Owen, our young firefighter.
Who's always a good hang.
Always standing by, ready to help whenever he can.
Mm-hmm.
Did the Christmas parade, Santa Claus parade this past week.
Yeah.
Good for you. He's got such a great smile, that Owen. Gotta love him. Thanks to all the great callers, everybody. Next week, my host.
Yes.
See you
Looking
then.
Forward.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio. The new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.